Support for KJZZ's coverage of tribal resources comes from Katina Foundation, dedicated to restoring human and ecological systems.
In 1989, members of the Havasupai tribe, whose people live deep in the Grand Canyon, approached researchers at ASU and asked for help identifying genomic markers that might point to a genetic disposition for diabetes. DNA samples were collected from members of the tribe, but years later, they learned their samples were used for much more, including research for things like mental illness and inbreeding, without their consent. They sued over it, won their samples back, and issued a banishment order against the university from their land. It's one of the most infamous examples of how researchers have taken Indigenous people's data without permission and the devastating results it can yield. Our next guest aims to combat that problem. Crystal Soucy is a geneticist and bioethicist at Vanderbilt University and the Native Biodata Consortium, and she's a member of the Navajo Nation. She helped to organize the first Indigidata Consortium, which met in June, focused on training a new generation of Indigenous data scientists. Now she's been profiled by the New York Times for her work promoting Indigenous data sovereignty. I spoke with her more about it and the long, sordid history that's led up to this.
There have been over 200 plus research publications that look at genetic origins of alcoholism based in Indigenous populations. Therefore, trying to draw a biological link as to why supposedly Native Americans drink. When, if you look at the statistics, Native Americans don't have higher rates of alcoholism compared to other populations. So this is just using genetics to reify a negative stereotype that's been used against us.
That's fascinating. That's something that we've all heard, right? So you're saying that this is sort of systemic?
Oh, yes. So a lot of innovation in genetics is driven toward finding novel variants in populations that have not been included in research. And that usually means small populations like Indigenous peoples. Researchers are completely interested in Indigenous DNA to look at us as fonts of undiscovered variation before we disappear. And these are phrases that have been used against us in publications, especially when you talk about the Human Genome Diversity Project. This is a project that was started in the mid-90s out of Stanford University by Luca Cavalli-Sforza to try to sample as many populations before we vanished. Now, they're totally ignoring that the reason why we were supposedly vanishing from the populations was due to colonialism. No, they just want to get our DNA and our blood before we were supposedly wiped off the face of the earth.
So tell us about your own path in this and sort of how you ended up in this realm. You began your career in cancer research, correct?
I actually patented a couple of technologies related to cancer visualization and drug delivery. And I just remember walking in the halls of Hopkins, where I was first going to pursue my PhD, and I was diluting drugs on like these petri dishes of cells and talking to researchers who were counting the number of drug patents on their wall and realizing that even if I were to create something that would pass all of the different levels of clinical trials, would this actually benefit my communities? When we're talking about the fact that top-tier drugs usually benefit rich, affluent individuals first before it trickles down to individuals with variable access to insurance, I have to question, why am I, as an Indigenous person, going to be spending so much time trying to create something that may not benefit my own people?
Okay, so I want to go back to this idea of Indigenous data sovereignty. Why is it valuable and how are you trying to reclaim it here?
When we talk about the next innovations in medicine, or even in terms of developing technologies like the direct-to-consumer tests that supposedly estimate our Native American ancestry, like 23andMe and Ancestry DNA, there's a commercial interest in looking at Indigenous biomarkers. Ancestry DNA posted revenues over $1 billion every holiday quarter since 2017 before they were bought by a venture capitalist firm for $6 billion last year. There's money in this. The number one question by Ancestry DNA, according to their vlog, is why isn't my Native American ancestry showing up? People don't understand, you know, that there's a lot of stereotyping involved in trying to reify what it means to be Native American by our DNA. That's not how we defined ourselves. We defined ourselves culturally through kinship structures, through our lived experiences and our histories. This has nothing to do with biology.
Yeah. So a lot of people trying to find their, you know, Native American grandmother or great grandmother or something, and they're just misunderstanding and doing something actually harmful in the process without even knowing it often.
Oh, exactly. For whatever reason, people like to fetishize or over-romanticize what it means to be part of Native American. And a lot of the times, this is like white people trying to absolve themselves of their guilt. And if they can try to prove that they're Native American through these genetic ancestry tests, I mean, they're going to do it. But what people don't realize is that these genetic tests are not even using U.S. tribal members. They're basing their estimates, which are statistical inferences, on biomarkers exploited from indigenous peoples in Central and South America. So for people that are trying to estimate their, you know, percentage or trying to identify what tribe they're from, they're not going to get from these tests.
So then, Crystal, what does it mean to take this back, to reclaim it, to do what you're doing like at this symposium earlier this summer and train people who are indigenous how to manage, how to collect, how to use this data?
If we're going to talk about data justice and equity and increased inclusion and representation in data sets, these decisions have to be made by the community members that represent us. That means training ourselves. That means training us to be the next generation of indigenous data scientists. The new economies of scale, the money is going to be driven in data. If we want to build capacity and build empowerment, then we need to train indigenous peoples to be able to retain ownership over all domains of the data that are collected about us.
So what are your hopes going forward as you take that underway and try to train this new generation, as you say?
I feel like we created a movement. At the end of our workshop, we just had this overwhelming sense of unity that we had created something special and that we're just going to take these up-and-coming indigenous students and scholars and, you know, give them the training and the tool sets to be able to say that, you know, our data should fundamentally benefit us. And then they can take those tool sets and go back to their communities and really build like local STEM capacity. We can build technologies that really benefit us, not some Fortune 500 company that has really no interest in actually benefiting us except for their next increase in stock prices. No, this means that if we're going to talk about data justice, data equity, that we need to ensure that the data that's about us benefits us.
Yeah. All right. That's Crystal Soucy, a geneticist and bioethicist at Vanderbilt University and the Native Biodata Consortium. She's also a member of the Navajo Nation. Crystal, thank you so much for coming on the show to talk about this. I really appreciate you explaining it, and best of luck going forward.
Thank you so much.